तत्र जगद्गुरो भवतो दर्शनं यत्स्यात् अपुनर्भवदर्शनम्। विपदः सन्तु ताः शश्वत् तत्र जगद्गुरो भवतो दर्शनं यत्स्याद् अपुनर्भवदर्शनम्। विपदः सन्तु ताः शश्वत् तत्र जगद्गुरो भवतो दर्शनं यत्स्याद् अपुनर्भवदर्शनम्। Calamities. Santu, let there be. Taha, all. Shashvat, again and again. Tatra, there. Tatra, and there. Jagadguru, Jagadguru, O Lord of the universe. Bhavataha, your. Darshanam, meeting. Yat, that which. Syat, is. Apunaha, not again. Bhavadarshanam, seeing repetition of birth and death. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki. I wish that all those calamities would happen again and again so that we could see you again and again. For seeing you means that we will no longer see repeated births and deaths. Purport. Generally, the distressed, the needy, the intelligent and the inquisitive who have performed some pious activities worship or begin to worship the Lord. Others who are thriving on misdeeds only, regardless of status, cannot approach the Supreme due to being misled by the illusory energy. Therefore, for a pious person, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Constantly remembering the lotus feet of the Lord means preparing for liberation from birth and death. Therefore, even though there are so-called calamities, they are welcome because they give us an opportunity to remember the Lord, which means liberation. One who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nations, can achieve liberation as easily as one leaps over the holes made by the hooves of a calf. Such persons are meant to reside in the abode of the Lord. And they have nothing to do with a place where there is danger at every step. This material world is certified by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita as a dangerous place full of calamities. Less intelligent persons prepare plans to adjust to those calamities without knowing that the nature of this place is itself full of calamities. They have no information of the abode of the Lord, which is full of bliss and without trace of calamity. The duty of the sane person, therefore, is to be undisturbed by worldly calamities, which are sure to happen in all circumstances. Suffering all sorts of unavoidable misfortunes, one should make progress in spiritual realization, because that is the mission of human life. The spirit soul is transcendental to all material calamities. Therefore, the so-called calamities are called falls. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger and there is no suffering. It is simply a case of dreams. In the same way, all calamities of life are said to be dreams. If someone is lucky enough to get in contact with the Lord by devotional service, it is all gain. Contact with the Lord by any one of the 9 devotional services is always a forward step on the path going back to Godhead. Om Ajnanat Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshuhun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale. We are reading from the prayers of Queen Kunti, one of the most glorified prayers by the Vaishnavas. Although every verse of Srimad Bhagavatam is special, still there are certain verses which are most adored by the devotees, and today's verse is one such verse spoken by Queen Kunti. Where she is praying to the Lord for more and more calamities in her life so that she can always behold the beautiful form of Krishna in her heart in all such occasions. When there is a calamity or a suffering in this world, depending on which mode we are situated, we will respond to that. Like if somebody is in mode of ignorance, they may commit suicide. Or they may take to intoxicants by which they can, for the time being, forget the calamity by drinking or smoking or taking to drugs so that they can offset their consciousness and they may get absorbed in something else, in mode of ignorance. If one is in mode of passion, then one will act aggressively. One may want to find out the cause of the calamity or suffering, and one may respond aggressively to destroy someone or attack someone when one is in mode of passion. And in mode of passion, one will not have the eyes to see that the sufferings that come in our life are actually a consequence of our own actions offered by some instrument arranged by the Lord. One cannot see that. In mode of passion, one will retaliate back on the instrument which offers the suffering. But when one is in goodness, mode of goodness, then one will run to superior help. Especially here, Prabhupada explains here, for pious persons, if there is some calamity, there is no other alternative than to take the shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord. Om Tad Vishnum Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Surayah. They are the demigods. The demigods run to shelter of Lord Vishnu when there is a calamity. Whenever there is a cosmic danger, they run to the Supreme Lord. In any situation, you will find Indra committing so many mistakes. But the beauty is every time he commits mistake, he goes to superior help. And like sometimes you find him going to his guru Brihaspati for help. Other time he goes to Brahma for help, for superior advice. So that is why Indra's character is found in the scriptures. Because although he does a lot of mistakes, in all those mistakes and problems and calamities, the only credit of Indra is that he always takes shelter of sages or other demigods, seniors, superiors, or you take shelter of Guru, or Brahma, or Vishnu. You do like that. Like, you know, Indra didn't bring Surabhi cow with him by himself. He got superior advice. So that goes to show that those who are pious persons, they will always run to the shelter of the Lord when there is calamity. That is why the scriptures glorify a person who gratifies his senses with the sanction of the scriptures than a person who achieves sense gratification independent of God by being an atheistic person. So the demigods may be mixed devotees of the Lord, and they may be gratifying their senses in various ways, but when there is a danger, they take shelter of Vishnu. So they are glorified for that. So Prabhupada quotes here, Chaturvidha Bhajante Mam Jana Sukrit Narodana Narjuna Artho Jigyasu Artharthi Jnani. He quotes those four people. And these people run to the shelter of the Lord when there is a calamity in their life, because they cannot understand. I am trying to be a good person. Why does calamity come in my life? So they are ignorant about the calamities in the material world. But one good quality they have is they have faith in the Lord. The Lord can offer me shelter. Most often, it's likely that they may expect the Lord to sort out the problem for them and remove the calamity. And then they can thank the Lord. Thank you very much that you have removed my calamity. Now I am very happy now. For example, Indra is running to Lord when there is a calamity, when Vritrasura is created. And then after Vritrasura is killed, Indra is very happy. Now I can continue my business of being an Indra, king of all the demigods. While Vritrasura returns back to spiritual world, and Indra is unable to understand the value and glory of getting delivered from this world and going back to spiritual world. You can see the comparison of Vritrasura and Indra. Vritrasura is telling Indra, you cannot kill me very easily. You have to use your Vajra. And he even teaches him the method, how to kill him. And Indra takes idea from Vritrasura, how to kill Vritrasura, and he kills him also. You know, after he kills him, Vritrasura goes to a yogic posture, where his neck becomes very stiff. And Indra has to cut his neck for several years. He has to buy very, very great endeavor. So, you can see that Indra doesn't appreciate the value of being under the lotus feet of the Lord or under the shelter of the Lord for all time to come. But mixed devotees have that nature that they will think of the Lord only when there is danger and not at other times. At other times, they will be absorbed in their own sense gratificatory pursuits, their own sense gratification. So this is the height that a person in goodness is able to achieve. A person who is in mode of goodness, maximum he can think of the Lord in danger. At other times, he may be thinking of his own pleasures in mode of goodness. And even when he takes shelter of the Lord, he thinks that the Lord will help me to save me. That's why there are so many songs, poems, prayers written by so many people all over India, most of them focusing on, oh Lord, please save me from the danger, remove this calamity from my life so I can be peaceful and happy. Of course, if people know that Lord is the ultimate and there is no one equal to Him or superior to Him. But that is not the highest platform. That is only one of the platforms of a pious person, but there are many higher platforms beyond this. Gandhi, in one of his writings, My Experiments with Truth, he says, whenever there is any calamity in his life, immediately he reads those series of verses between 2.55 to 2.72 in Bhagavad Gita, where there is a very vivid description about how a sthitaprajna person responds to other people. For example, in the 2.55 there is a description, in the 56-57, when other people insult him or behave with him in an affectionate way or behave in a neutral way, how does a sthitaprajna respond? Which means, how are his words and intelligence affected when other people insult him or show their love for him or behave neutrally with him? So there Krishna says, dukkeshu anudignamana sukeshu vyagataspraha vitaraga bhayakrodha sthitadhir muni ruchyate. So there Krishna is talking about the sthitadhir muni or sthitaprajna. In dukkha is anudvignamana. He doesn't become agitated in his mind when there is a suffering. And sukha, when sukha comes, sukeshu vyagataspraha, he doesn't become attached to that sukh, not ready to leave it, hold on to it, and is not afraid of being stripped off that happiness that comes to him. So this kind of nature is very rare, because when suffering comes, we break down. And when happiness comes, we become attached to it. And we don't want to leave it. That's why he says, subsequently, Vita Raga Bhaya Krodha. This Raga Bhaya Krodha is explained in the Ayurveda, that three types of people exhibit this Raga Bhaya and Krodha. A person who is in Kapha Pravritti, he exhibits Raga, attachment. because he is always by nature very jolly, and he becomes attached to pleasures, and generally he is hale and healthy, and he is attached to those pleasures which he gets in his life. And a person who is in vata pravritti, he is always very thin, and his bones are protruding out, and he is always fearful in nature. He imagines fears, and he feels inferiority complex. He is a person in vata prakriti. And a person in pitta prakriti, he always is incited by anger. Suddenly he becomes angry, he flares up. So vita raga bhaya krodha. So that means one should go beyond kapha vata pitta, which means one should become transcendental. Even while situated in the body, one should become situated in the transcendence. One should become a jivan mukta beyond this raga bhaya and krodha, which means if one is transcendentally situated, one will not be afraid even when attacked by a leopard or a cheetah. One will not be afraid while performing penance in the forest, because one knows I am not the body at all. One is not afraid. That is why he says dukkeshu anudignamana. He has no fear, and he has no attachment, and he has no anger, he says. So there are many calamities there. In one of the purports, Prabhupada writes that in the material world there are always some upheavals going on. And Prabhupada says there that it is very natural to have calamities in this world. So very Prabhupada says it's normal to have calamities. This goes to show how a devotee anticipates calamities in the material world. Because it is padam padam yat pipadam natesham. At every step there is some danger or the other. Calamities can be of different varieties. For example, there can be scarcity of food. There can be scarcity of money. There can be crisis, money crisis, financial crunch or money crisis. There is always danger. Anytime the money you have can be taken away. You have put the money in some bank, it can go diwala, bankrupt. Similarly, sometimes there is scarcity of food. We had this Y2K problem some years ago. That time they said there is going to be scarcity of food. Because any time if there is scarcity of food, you don't eat 2, 3, 4 days, then we can't survive. Like in some places nowadays, there is bomb blasts and there is curfew put up. When there is curfew for 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, 6 days, and there is nothing in your stock, you have two choices. Either to starve and die, or to be daring, go out even in the curfew period and buy something. Of course, I don't know where you will buy from. Everything will be closed. Try to get something from outside and be shot by someone, isn't it? So there is a danger in this world. There can be scarcity of food, a scarcity of money. There can also be accidents to our body or to the property. There can be any type of accident. Like for example, the body is very fragile and very weak. And any type of accident can make the body killed. Like, you know, there is a real story of a child in Bombay. Small boy, you know. Children are always very naughty. You know, they take the knife, they touch the fire, they sometimes pour down the water or something. Or sometimes they go out of the home. They don't know the dangers. Because children are totally ignorant. Like the other day, I saw one man had put a child on the top of the berth in the train. And they had put a pillow, you know, so that the child will not fall. The child toppled ahead of the pillow. Can you imagine? And he revolved and he fell right on his lap when he was sitting down. So, children don't know. When you are on a berth, you know there is danger. But children don't know. Children, they just are ignorant. So, one of the child in a home, when his grandmother was cooking, he just picked up that weight of the cooker, you know, and he put it in his mouth and he swallowed it. Of course, the lady was trying to pull out that from the mouth of the child. The child swallowed it and was taken to the hospital and he died. So, there is always danger. Anytime there can be accident in this world. It's not that accident can happen only for ignorant child. We are more learned and we are more intelligent. Some people don't know how to cross the road, you've seen. They will run, especially in village you find. When buses, cars come, they don't know when to cross the road. They'll be carrying something and suddenly they run. And all the cars, buses have to stop, you know. Anyone coming on other sides. So you may say that they are foolish people. They don't know how to cross the road. But even the wise people who know how to cross the road have faced the accident. When there is a will of providence, you are standing very safely in one side of the road and the lorry comes straight on you and smashes a person to dust. It has happened to many people. So, in this world there can be accidents to the body. Similarly, there can be accidents to our property. Property can be stolen away. There is always fear. When you have a property, there is always fear. It can be stolen any time from us. There is a threat that we may lose the property. Property can be money. Property can be commodity. Property can be possessions. Property can be land. Property can be anything. There is a danger of losing them. Similarly, there is a danger in this world of diseases. Nowadays, diseases come in peculiar forms. Nobody can predict. Sometimes there is brain tumor, even for a young man, even in young age. Sometimes, you know, the pancreas packet explodes suddenly and there is internal bleeding and a person dies on the spot. Young people die nowadays. So the diseases are unpredictable. What disease will come to who? Nobody can say. So there is always a fear of diseases in this world. And ultimately the death, which causes the ultimate fear for everyone. So in this world, the calamity can take various shapes. It can come in different shapes. So in such calamity, what does a devotee of the Lord do? Prabhupada says, one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are accepted as the most suitable boat for crossing the ocean of nescience, can achieve liberation very easily. So when calamities come in a devotee's life, the very first question that comes in a devotee's mind is, why should Krishna put me in trouble? I am his devotee. How can Lord put his devotee in trouble? This is very unfair. This is very unreasonable. Some people even ask the question, Prabhuji, is it true that if you become a devotee, you will face some troubles in life? So better not become a serious devotee. Better remain where I am. Let me go pretty slow, you know. Because if you become too serious, then maybe I will face some calamities in life. Similarly, some people fear that if you become a serious devotee, somewhere I have heard, the Lord takes away everything. Isn't it? Yasyaham anugruhnami harishyeta dhanam shanai. Some people fear. Not become a serious devotee. I don't want such high class mercy. Let me remain where I am. People think like that. It's not true that every devotee has to necessarily face calamity. It's not true. But Prabhupada, in one of his conversations, he says, a devotee should not expect that the material world will be a bed of roses for me. Now that I am a good man, I am a good woman, now I have become a good person now, I am pious now, so everything should be wonderful for me. The whole world should be like a bed of roses. Everyone will talk lovingly to me. Everyone will appreciate what I am doing, the path of Krishna consciousness. When I am doing my Krishna consciousness, all obstacles should fall apart. They all should go away and the path should be cleared for me and I will walk very courageously. That's what people expect. But Prabhupada says, no, don't expect that to happen. A devotee is not free from the rough seas. He says, rough seas means sometimes when you're going in the middle of an ocean, you find that the waves are very rough and they appear to be very cruel. And the waves gradually turn into tides. And the tides start rising sky high. And it seems there is no possibility of safety for life. Similarly, a devotee is also not free from rough seas. And there is a likelihood that such rough seas may happen in our life too. You may ask, why? If I become a devotee, why should it happen in my life? If I am not a devotee, it is all right. But if I am a devotee, how can such things happen in my life? So they happen for various reasons, which Prabhupada explains in his purports in different places. When a calamity comes in a devotee's life, a devotee thinks, I deserve this and I deserve much more than this. Because I am a sinner. I committed a lot of sins in my past life, the previous lives, as well as in this life. And I deserve punishment. And when I get those punishments, all my reactions will be finished. And I am ready to, then I'll be fit and eligible to return back to God. Let all my reactions come. A devotee is very gracefully ready to receive and accept all the reactions for his past life. A devotee never tells the Lord, "My dear Lord, please minimize my reactions. My dear Lord, please don't give me my reactions. Now I am your devotee, now please take note and don't put me in trouble." The devotee never prays. The devotee is ready to receive the reactions. But a devotee knows in the heart that whatever reactions I am getting is not full. It is only a part reaction or a token reaction that Lord is giving. Because Lord actually is very merciful and very kind. Despite my not praying to Him, still He will minimize the reactions. So, why should I lament for the minimized reactions? Like the devotee feels. So, I should not lament. It's foolishness to lament. While I deserve much more, when Lord is giving me minimum, why should I lament? He doesn't lament at all. And also, a devotee sees the Lord's hand whenever there are calamities. It's like the loving slap of a mother towards a child. Sometimes a child is naughty, your mother may twist the ears or slap a child lovingly in order to correct him. So a devotee, when he is leading a spiritual life, a devotee feels that probably I am going wrong. I am becoming falsely proud. Or I am misusing the resources that Lord has given for me to use. If a devotee faces calamities, he feels that maybe Lord is slapping me in order to correct me, in order to bring me to the track. And a devotee feels all the troubles that Lord gives me in my life are actually given for molding me into a pure devotee. That is Lord's goal. A devotee can take it as a test, or a devotee may take it as mercy, or a devotee may take it as the Lord's orchestration to make him suffer, ultimately to purify him, to bring him to the happy state of pure devotional service. You can see like that. Just like you see in a home, when the mother wakes up a sleeping child, as soon as the mother wakes up the child in the morning, he starts crying. Kua, 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 continuously he will cry, you will see that. Then when she takes the child to the bathroom and starts putting hot water, of course mother knows she will never put burning hot water to burn the skin of the child. She knows. She has touched the water, she knows. It's quite mild, lukewarm. But then when the mother puts the child on her, she keeps her legs straight and puts the child on her legs and starts pouring the hot water on the body of the child, the child will cry like anything. You've seen that? Such crying. And all through his bathing he'll be crying. You will see that. Continuous cry. So once when I saw a lady who was bathing a child like that, I said, let him first become peaceful, then you can bathe. And she laughed and said, this is everyday affair. She said, every day it's the same thing. When Yasuna is waking from the bed and you put him in the feet and start, mothers know it very well. You put in the feet and start bathing the child. Mothers know how to bathe the child, isn't it? After bathing the child, he'll be crying, 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 everything, and then she will get a napkin and wrap it around the body of the child, and still he'll continue crying. Then she'll get the powder and put it all over the body of the child, pat, 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 beat on the front, back, all sides. Still he will continue crying. And the crying will take its maximum volume when she takes the kajal, in her hand and starts putting in the eyes. And the child will turn all directions, this way, that way, And after, somehow or other, mothers are very intelligent to put that in the eyes of the child. And then take the hair of the child and put a rubber band or something. And then she will keep the child on the lap. And then you see the child, he'll be completely calm. Completely. And he'll be smiling also sometimes. So, our mind is exactly like that. That's why mind is compared to a child. When the Lord is purifying us through calamities, we scream and we yell and we throw tantrums on others and we create a havoc. But when mind is given that treatment, when mind is purified in Krishna consciousness, and then when one is practicing Krishna consciousness, one will feel the bliss. Then mind will really smile. One will be truly happy. But one has to go through that difficult stage to come to the point of experiencing the true bliss. And we should be prepared for that. So the choice is ours. Either we can be like that crying child, cry and make our situation more miserable, or accept it as a part of life. when the Lord is giving all these calamities, accepted that, yes, my dear Lord, I can see that you are the one who is offering these punishments to me, offering these sufferings to me. Somebody is insulting me. He cannot insult me without your knowledge. Is there anything in this world which can happen without Lord's knowledge? He is a witness, antaryami, in everyone's heart. That fellow is insulting in your presence. Somebody is harming me or hurting me, or my diseases are causing me so much suffering and pain with your knowledge. Everything is happening. Right now, I may not be able to interpret it, analyze it, evaluate it with my limited grams of brain. But I know that these are inconceivable to me. But although while chanting the holy names, I cannot perceive you, while taking the darshan of the deities, because of my anger towards you, I cannot appreciate your form, or I cannot love you, still I know that your plans are always inconceivable to foolish living entities like me. I cannot know it. But I know that behind your inconceivable plan, there is always a great benefit that is hidden, which I do not know at the moment. But I have firm faith in you. I know that nothing can happen for my bad. Everything happens for my good. So this is the way the devotee looks at the calamity. That is why it is said a devotee should be externally cheerful. A devotee should be externally tolerant and internally cheerful. And a devotee should be fixed in service. These three things I read in one of the letters of Prabhupada. Prabhupada says a devotee should be externally tolerant, internally cheerful, and should be fixed in service when calamities come. And this you find in Bali Maharaj's life. When Bali Maharaj was faced with calamity, such a calamity where, you know, all the people in general, they rebuked him, his relatives and friends chastised him, his guru cursed him, and the Lord himself bound him with Varunapash. Lord had bound him, and in this way he had become bereft of all the opulences and riches, name and fame, position and possessions, everything. At that time, Bali Maharaj was standing in front of the Lord with his head hanging down. And then Lord looked at his face to check how is Bali feeling. But Lord found there was a smile on his face. And why that smile? He realized in his heart that Lord is actually purifying me. And this purification is doing for me is for my own good. So when one passes through the dangerous difficulties and calamities and tests that come in one's life, then what is the end? The end is always wonderful. So Lord becomes Bali's Dwarapalak in the Sutala Lok. So Lord gives assurance in the scriptures that when you face difficulty, what do I expect from you? I expect you to take shelter of me like a child. And then when you take shelter of me like a child, I will give you the buddhi, I will give you the strength, I will give you the resources by which you will be able to face those calamities and face those difficulties. And if you have complete faith in me and accepting whatever I have offered you, with that you take, you face the calamities. And then what will be the end result? The end result is that I give myself to you. That's the end result. So Lord says, see these calamities like a game in this world. Don't become bogged up by them. Don't foolishly curse or blame situations and people around you. Don't complain. Don't become disheartened. Don't become broken down. Don't give up your sadhana. Don't give up your service. Don't give up faith in me. But you should, whenever such calamities come, you should take shelter of me. See, Lord, this is the Lord's great plan by giving these calamities in our lives. Actually speaking, calamities are no calamities, Prabhupada says towards the end. See here, he says, the spirit soul is transcendental to all mental calamities. Therefore, so-called calamities are called false. A man may see a tiger swallowing him in a dream, and he may cry for this calamity. Actually, there is no tiger and there is no suffering, he says. Actually, the soul is spiritual in nature. He belongs to the spiritual world. So what calamity can happen to the soul? For example, the greatest calamity we can think of is death, isn't it? But death also, Lord Krishna says, na inam chintanti shastrani, na inam dahati pavakah, na jainam kleda yantyapo, na shoshati marutah. My dear Arjuna, these are the physical properties of the soul, that it cannot be wetted by water, it cannot be dried by air, it cannot be burnt by fire, it cannot be cut by any weapons like the sword or the knife or anything like that. Then why one should lament? Even when somebody kills our body, it's only the dead material body that is cut. Atma can never be cut. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Prabhupada used to quote it very often. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. The soul can never be killed. The greatest calamity that we can think of. Why we feel this great calamity of death to be greatest calamity? It is because of our attachment. Like if somebody is told, we have a cancer in the finger, we have to amputate your finger, that fellow will cry like anything. How can I wander here and there with my four fingers? What will people talk about me? Doctor, please help me to have five fingers somehow. You remove the disease, but I want five fingers. But doctor says, no, you have to cut it. If you are going to have this finger, then the cancer cannot be stopped. So there are very few people who can agree for amputating the finger. But then later on the cancer spreads in the hand and the doctor says, now you have to amputate your whole hand. You have to remove this whole portion. Can you imagine wandering without this? And doctor may say later, he goes to America, he goes to London, all over the world he wanders for curing this. He's not able to cure. Doctor says, you have to remove the hand now. Isn't it? If you don't remove this hand now, it will spread to your body and your whole body has to be, has to die. So in this way, people don't want to give up one finger also or one hand also. At the time of death, not only the most near and dear relatives are taken away. One loves a husband or a wife or a children or mother or father or relatives, friends, and all the hard-earned wealth also remains behind, and you are taken away from the wealth and you are looking at the wealth left behind. You are looking at the relatives left behind. When people are going from Bombay, from their home to the college to study for 6 months or 1 year, in a faraway college, parents are weeping tears, saying, Tata, you've seen? They cry, you can see that. You've seen that? You go to the station, you can find so many parents and people weeping, when they see that. Some people run along with the train for some distance. So to be separated for a few months, people cry. And here a person sees that I have to be left. I'm going to leave them for all time to come. I'm seeing my mother, father, relatives, friends, wealth, I'm leaving everything. So owing to that attachment, one gets the 40,000 scorpion bites. That is why. If you have no attachment, there is no bite. You won't suffer. If one is a pure devotee, he will not suffer at all. Because he is thinking, oh, now the doors of Goloka Vrindavan are opening. My special master is standing there to receive me and take me back to Goloka. So there is no anxiety. But for a non-devotee, it's like 40,000 scorpion bites. It's very, very painful. But actually, even such a death is not painful in one sense. Why? Because actually the soul is never killed at all. And now from there you come down to other calamities. All of us are in a particular situation. And we cry. For example, there was a boy in one of the IITs. So after he returned from the interview, he had broken down to tears, sobbing. His eyes became red and his face was big and he was sobbing. Why? You know why he was crying? He was crying because he failed in the Microsoft campus interview and he could get only Infosys. So he was crying. So I was telling that fellow, are a fool. There are so many people who don't even get into engineering. And some people get into average engineering colleges, mediocre colleges. And some people get into government engineering colleges. Some people get into NITs. And some people, very few, get into IIT. And after getting into IIT, you are getting a job in Infosys and you are crying for that you couldn't get in Microsoft. That means even a person at that level can be crying, you understand? If you look at him, you will laugh at him. But for him, it's a very great suffering, you see. He's feeling a great suffering. That means God has put all of us in a particular situation in which there is enough opportunity for crying foolishly, in illusion. And everyone considers his temporary situation to be very, very important. Very, very important. Like a frog in the well. We all become like frog in the well in our situation. And in those situations, when some calamity comes, we make a big issue out of it, for that small calamity. So one has to become a udaradhi, broad-minded. This world is such a big place. There are pralayas taking place after every manvantar. There are pralayas taking place after every Divya Yuga. And there is pralaya taking place after every Brahma. Even Brahma is finished. At a large scale level, such great things are happening. And what is this earth? Earth is not even a small point in the vastness of the universe. And in this earth, we are in a small country. In the small country, we are in a small city. And our situation is very small. We are in a particular field. And in that field, if some calamities take place or changes take place, we become bogged up by it. So, in one sense, the calamity is an illusion for the living entity, because the living entity doesn't belong to this world at all. We all have come into this world to perform some activity for some period of time, and then we will have to return back to the spiritual world. This world is nothing but a drama stage, and everyone is doing drama. In drama, somebody is crying, somebody is laughing, somebody is shouting, somebody is yelling. This whole world is a nice drama stage, and everyone is doing drama. And if we become aloof from this world with this understanding that my life is a short journey to the material world, and all the situations are temporary. Prabhupada says, even as a devotee, we should know that by going here, by going there, by doing this, by doing that, our determination to love and serve Krishna should increase as a devotee. Sometimes we take our positions too seriously as a devotee. I am the head of this department. How can a thing happen without my sanction and my permission? I am president of the temple. So we take these roles too seriously. If somebody is too much attached to the roles that are given to them, temporary roles given to them, first of all, we have to know the roles and goals that we play are known to only a very few people. That should be known. Like, for example, one man was telling me, I have done research in this field, you know, doctorate research. And all over the world, only 3 people have done research in this field, he said. Anyway, I didn't tell him anything. Heart of hearts, I was thinking, that means this goes to show how insignificant is your field. You know, isn't it? For example, what you have done research, if you say, you know, he will say, you know, in the field of metallurgy, and I have done research in this boundary element modeling, and in the field of boundary element modeling, I have done on an electrochemical problem, I have done on a mechanical engineering problem, and even a mechanical engineering problem I have done on this. So it becomes narrowed and narrowed and narrowed, and it is so narrow that not many people have done research, only 3 have done research. So your fame also is limited to those 3 people, not more than that 3. So we have to know that. Similarly, sometimes I am made a president now. If I become very president, okay, I am president of what? I am president of Pune temple. And what is it? It is ISKCON. So I am known in ISKCON world as president. See, ISKCON has 400 centers, and the 400 centers in India, there are 50 centers. In 50 centers, I am known as president. But if you take the population of those 50 centers of ISKCON, it's going to be a few lakh maximum. That is a few lakhs. And the population of the world is 6 billion population. So in 6 billion population, I am not even known amongst a few lakh people. So why should I become proud? We all can think like that very deeply in our own heart. Our fame is in a limited circle. Even in a city like Pune, for example, my power as a president is only valid only within this compound. If I cannot go to Dastur Boy School and control any children there. If I say, hi, I'm president of Pune, I have come now. All children, you know, don't make noise, keep quiet. Nobody is going to hear me. They will laugh at me, we tell them. But maybe if I have to control them, I have to tell the principal or someone. He can control, because the authority for them is a different person, and his jurisdiction is only Dastur School. And my jurisdiction is only the small compound, that's all. So we all have a jurisdiction within which we work and within which our fame is limited. But we assume that role and goal to be a very important role. Only out of foolishness. So, we should understand, even if some wealth is lost also, what is wealth is never lost. If you see from the law of conservation of energy, ultimately all wealth is within the clutches of Lakshmiji only. Lakshmi is holding all the wealth. It can go from, you know, from pocket to the pant or pant to the pocket. It's ultimately within the jurisdiction of Goddess of Fortune Lakshmi. Nothing can be lost. So if you see from a point of aloofness from this world, in one sense there is no calamity. But from another point of view, we can understand, even if we perceive calamity in this world, that calamity is arranged and orchestrated by the Lord so that we can take His shelter. And we can beg Him for strength, beg Him for sadbuddhi, knowledge. Beg Him so that we don't lose faith in Him. Beg the Lord to give us direction and guidance in our lives so that we can face that calamity, what we feel as calamity. Whereas the devotee laughs it off. He doesn't see calamity as a calamity. When Prabhupada was in America, he was telling his disciples, "You know, I was a pharmaceutical businessman, and Gaudiya Math sannyasis used to come to my shop and tell me, 'Why don't you join us full time? And we want to make you president of the local temple, Gaudiya Math.' And Prabhupada would say, 'No, no, no, I would like to be a businessman and I would like to give some donation for your Krishna conscious propagation.' So Krishna saw me, what is my pure devotee doing? He is doing chemical business? Such a foolish thing. He should be preaching my glories and he is doing chemical business. He is having transaction with material things, selling and buying material things. So Krishna stole away everything. Yasya aham anugruhnami harishyedad dhanam shanai. So my Lord took, wherever I went, there was failure in my business, Prabhupada said. I went to Allahabad, there was failure. I went to home, wherever I went, there was failure. On the other hand, when I was trying to print back to God, that was very well received. Wherever I went, that was gaining more and more success. So Krishna was showing me that I want you to serve me and I want you to give up that chemical business. So in this way, Prabhupada clearly is able to see how the calamities that came in his life is the orchestration of Krishna. Prabhupada could clearly see it. He had absolutely no ambiguity. And he was very happy in saying this. And Prabhupada says in another place, first when I met my spiritual master, he gave me this instruction. But I was not so intelligent. I was in Maya at that time. Prabhupada saying, I was thinking, that time I had taken my son once, you know, Vrindavan day. I was taking him. At that time I thought, oh, now I am married and I have a child. If only I wasn't having a family, I would have given myself totally to my spiritual master. But then I thought I have some responsibilities of the family. Actually, I did a mistake. I must have surrendered fully that time, Prabhupada says to his disciples. So he sees that it is Krishna orchestrating his entire life at every point, everything that happened. So when Prabhupada was taken to the West, he said, "My dear Lord, why have you brought me here?" He's asking. That means he's able to see that Lord has brought me to a very dangerous place like America. But there has to be some purpose for that. You see, when all the covered boys were dancing their way into the mouth of Aghasura, some of them suspected that Aghasura could be some animal. And some of them thought it is a plaything when they were dancing into the rose tongue of Aghasura, when they were entering inside. It was like a big highway, you know. But then some of the boys said, "Okay, even if it is some dangerous creature or animal, anyway Lord Krishna is there, He will protect us. What is the fear?" Then they entered their way and then they smelled the fishy smell that was coming from the mouth of Aghasura. Then they understood it is some dangerous animal. And when Krishna entered into the mouth of Aghasura, immediately closed it, mouth. And all the demigods were crying, "Hi, hi," they were all shouting in the sky. Alas, Krishna has entered into the mouth and now Krishna will be finished. You see, the demigods drink amrit and they are supposed to be immortal. So they are, why should they fear? But they were having fear. Because they were fearful that now Aghasura will kill Krishna. And after that, now we were all watching from the sky, so he will come to kill us also. He is going to chase after us. Although they may not be killed because they have drunk amrit. But the covered boys have not drunk any amrit, but they were so confident in entering into the mouth of Aghasura because they were very confident that Krishna will protect us. Similarly, Srila Prabhupada entered into America, which is like Aghasura, going to a place like New York, which is Maya's headquarters, entering boldly into the mouth of Maya, which is like putting a head into lion's mouth. You know, in circus they do that. Put your head into lion's mouth for some time and they release it later on. All the people are watching with bated breath, you know. Imagine if the lion chuck closes the mouth, you know, only the body without head will be remaining and head will be inside the mouth of the lion. Only fearful. But people do that. Similarly, Prabhupada entered into America very boldly. You know, we can say it's dangerous in various respects, because of the culture of America, because of the bad habits of America, because there's a life threat. There were also criminals in Bowery. Prabhupada may be shot. There was life threat. There was also threat from men and women who were all having all bad habits. So one may, and Prabhupada may be caught up in some police case. But you can see, with all those dangers he entered, and successfully he took shelter of Krishna and the holy name. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. So Prabhupada said, I had one thing with me, although I didn't have bhakti, I didn't have Vedanta, but I had very firm faith in Krishna's holy name. And that Krishna's holy name actually protected Prabhupada, and it helped Prabhupada to propagate the name everywhere. So Prabhupada saw all the calamities that came in his life. Many calamities came. A bull hit Prabhupada when he was in North India. He fell on the ground. Once Prabhupada actually fainted when he was selling back to Godhead. When he went to America, one of the first hippies whom he wanted to make as devotee, called David, he became a drug addict, stoned in drug addiction, and he came to kill Prabhupada. There were so many dangers he faced in his life. But Prabhupada saw all those dangers as Krishna's orchestration in his life. Krishna is putting me in all these things. Oh Krishna, if you want to kill me, you may kill me. Krishna, if you want to protect me, you can protect me. But whatever you do, ultimately I know it's meant for my good and for everyone's good. If by you putting me in this trouble, if the world can benefit, I don't feel any hesitation to even offer my life to you. You take my life. You may kill me. But if that's what is needed for propagation of the message, just like Jesus was killed on the cross. But after Jesus was killed, the Christianity spread 100 times, 1,000 times more faster. So he was ready to lay down his life also. Haridas Thakur was also tortured for propagating the holy name. But he was ready to take all the torture for propagating the holy name. So great acharyas and Vaishnavas have shown to the world that one should accept calamities and even welcome calamities like Kunti is doing, if that's what is needed for propagating the holy name of the Lord and for always seeing the Lord. When I first read this verse, I had a little suspicion. What is the suspicion that came to my mind? Kunti is saying, Bhavato darshanam yatsyat apunarbhava darshanam. She is saying that, let all the calamities come in my life and I'll take shelter of you, and let me get rid of this bhavadarshan. Bhavadarshan means samsara sagar. That means maybe Kunti is feeling a lot of pangs of the cycle of birth and death. And she wants to use the Lord's bhakti or devotion service as a tool to get rid of this bhavarog or bhavasagar. She's feeling the pain too much. So she's saying that, okay, whatever bitter medicine I have to take now, let me take now, so that I'll be free from this disease of bhavarog. Is that what she's feeling? That was my suspicion. If that's what is her feeling, then it is not a very noble feeling. It's not a very noble feeling. Because then you are using bhakti as a means to transcend the material existence, which some jnanis also do. Then later on, I also read Kulashekar. He was also talking a lot about the bhavasagar, bhavarog, and many other places I read. Then it put me to great surprise. Why do devotees of the Lord talk so ill about this bhavasagar, bhavarog, and why are they so much afraid? Why are they so much eager to go back to God? Is it not a sign of selfishness? Such questions came in my mind. But later on, one verse clarified this question that I had. I understood that the devotees of the Lord are not so much concerned about the pangs of the cycle of birth and death as much as they are concerned about living in the presence of the Lord. Their hankering for being in Krishna's presence is so great that they curse this material existence, which puts them to forgetfulness. Why do they hate the material existence? Because one of the natures of, as it says, Vayam dutiya abhiniveshatasya isha adapetasya viparyayo asmriti. This material world puts us to asmriti. So, Prahlad Maharaj is cursing Bhavasagar. Kunti is cursing Bhavasagar. Kulashakra is cursing Bhavasagar. Why? Because the nature of Bhavasagar is to put us in forgetfulness of Krishna. That is the nature, asmriti. So a devotee considers asmriti as the greatest curse. And the devotee is saying, you make me suffer in hell for millions of years. You fry me in the oil, I don't mind. Fry me like a puri in the oil, I don't mind. You torture me, destroy me, kill me, I don't mind. But don't neglect me. Don't put me in the curse of forgetfulness. So with one verse from Kulashekar, I will conclude the talk today. Kulashekar is praying, give me suffering, he is saying in one of the prayers. Naham vande tava charanayor dvandvam advandvaheto. I don't want to go beyond the sukha and dukkha of this world, my dear Lord. He's praying. Let sukha dukkha keep on coming like waves in my life. Kumbhi pakam gurum api harer narakam napanetum. Take me to Kumbhi Pak hell, where there are messengers of Lord Yama torturing all the living beings. Torture me there, I don't mind. I am not at all worried about the pain that comes from there. Ramya Rama Mridudanulata Nandane Napirantum. Nara, am I eager to go to the hell? If you want to send me to hell, you send me to heaven or hell, I don't mind. Where there is enjoyments going on. But then he says, Bhave, Bhave, Hrade Bhavane, Bhave Yam Bhavantam. I only aspire for your constant remembrance. I don't mind. That's why he said, Narayana Parasarve, Nakudashana Bibhyati. A devotee is never fearful of hell or heaven. Swarga, Apavarga, Narakeshu, Apitulyartha Darshana. A devotee is ready to go to hell or heaven or naraka or swarga or apavarga, anywhere, as long as there is remembrance of the Lord. He doesn't mind. Similarly, Kunti is praying here that, my dear Krishna, till now there were calamities and we had you with us. Are you now going away from us that now our situations have become comfortable? So, again give us calamities so that we can always be in your presence. And then she is saying, you may be in our presence, but then you may leave us and return back to your abode. You may leave us behind and you may return back to your abode. In that situation, again, we will not have you. Such is the nature of this material world, which unites us and separates us from the Lord. So we don't want to live in this horrible material world. We want to be in your presence always. And where is that possible? That is only in Apunarbhava Darshanam. When we go to the Apunarbhava, the spiritual world, there we can constantly see you. In the material world, we have eyes that keeps on winking. Every time we close our eyes, we can't see you. Isn't it? Similarly, there is a prayer by Mother Earth in the first canto of Bhagavatam. She says that, you know, O Lord, when you leave Vrindavan and go to Dwaraka, the Vrindavan Vasis cry. You know, when you leave Dwaraka and you come back to Vrindavan, the Dwaraka Vasis and Mathura Vasis, they cry. But the earth is the most fortunate, because whether Lord is in Vrindavan or in Dwaraka or Mathura, the earth will always be in the contact with the Lord's lotus feet. So she is always very fortunate. In the same way, Kunti is praying that, you know, there is always a possibility of we being separated from you in the material world. That is the way the material world is designed. Like the gopis of Vrindavan were separated from the Lord in the rasa dance. The Lord left them behind. So this is a very frightening thing for the devotees of the Lord. A devotee cannot even, it's like a nightmare for the devotee to be separated from the Lord even for a moment. So Radharani was sitting with Krishna when one of the boys came and told Krishna that I have driven away the Madhu. Madhu has gone. He will never come back. He said, it was actually a Madhu Brahmar. One Brahmar was disturbing Radha Krishna's pastime. So one boy, covered boy, drove away that bumblebee and came and told Krishna, Krishna, don't worry, now the Madhu has gone away, he'll never come back. So Radharani thought Madhu to be Krishna. And he said, Madhu has gone away, he'll never come back. Immediately she went into a Mahabhav, her eyes brimming with tears, her whole body trembling, her hair standing on end. She fell unconscious, thinking like that, you can imagine. So for a devotee, separation from Krishna is like a nightmare. They cannot tolerate separation from Krishna even for a moment. So Kunti is here saying, let any kind of calamities come, like earlier, Vishan, Mahagne, Purushad, Darshanat, Asat Sabayam, Vanavasa Krishratah. So many dangers came in the life of Pandavas, and Krishna was their constant companion. So she's telling, my dear Lord, let those calamities extend now. And we are prepared for that. You send calamities, we'll take your shelter, we'll pray to you, you give us strength, you give us intelligence. and we will face them, and in this way you will be with us and we will be with you, and the calamities are no more calamities. Mantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki.